We continue the shiur in Gemara. Today's shiur actually is in a sense a repetition, because most who have been here during the Navi shiurim, we had a series of Navi shiurim about the stories of Jewish history, part of the Torah, part of the Navi, and of course those shiur we had were taken from the Gemara. And now, in tonight's shiur, you'll see where the original story was taken from. This is the story of the miracles of Eliyahu HaNavi. We had this in Navi. It is definitely worth hearing again for those who have learned it.
You know, it says that you go back in history, the time of Yahushua. Yahushua is the disciple of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the Lord, who took all the leadership of the Jews and led the Jews into Eretz Israel. They did this battle against the 31 kings. First one, first battle in Italy, was a battle against the city of Jericho, the English Jericho. The city of Jericho was a fortress, a walled city, a miracle of the wall coming down, sinking to the ground. And because this was the first city or first land they conquered, therefore a decree was made that everything in that city was to be considered sacred. Not only that, but the word, the name, Jericho, became a forbidden name, a cursed name. So Yahushua issued two decrees, not one, but two. One, no person is ever allowed to rebuild the city of Jericho. It shall remain destroyed forever. Second, no person is ever allowed to build a different city and give it the name Jericho. That name too is cursed. What is meant by curse? Yahushua said the curse is as follows. Any man will build the city of Jericho, or a different city under this name, and he begins to build this city, and he digs the foundation, his oldest son will die. When he continues, the rest of his children will die, one after the other, and he finally sets the door, the gate of the city, and he completes them, and then his youngest son will die. This one is a statement made by Yahushua, and Tzaddik whose word was law. Law meaning that it was accepted by Hashem. This curse, of course, had to come through. Now we come to many generations later. During the time of the reign of King Ahaz, this was during the time after the division of the 12 tribes of Israel, the division of the 10 tribes that were outside of the two, outside of the family of King David. The rest of the kings there were evil idol worshippers. One of the worst was Ahab. Ahab was so bad. You recall previous sessions we had taken starting tomorrow, that Ahab was one of those very few. The Holy Torah said that after he died, he never forgets to the nation to this day that he is in Gehenna. According to most of the rabbis in Europe, right to the very most, was stupid. Now, that's how evil he was. He had spread idol worship. He was a faithful Muslim. Worst possible sin of idol worship. He spread so thoroughly among all the 10 tribes of Israel that he was considered the worst of all kings. At that time, this was the era of Eliyahu HaNavi, Eliyahu the prophet, who was a semi-angel, because, interestingly, the Gemara says, Zuri Kodesh asks, what is the background of Eliyahu HaNavi? Can we find any mention made about his parents? Who were his parents? The Gemara says it is forbidden to ask such a question. That is something that is too high above the normal, above the natural, and therefore even that question cannot be answered. It is fact, though, that Eliyahu HaNavi was, in the first place, a special creation. And he showed that his soul came from higher than the average. He was sort of a Moloch, an angel before he was born. Then he too was a Gilgal, reincarnation of Pinchas. Pinchas was a banana cup. Therefore, he is the one who fought, just as Pinchas fought the banana, sanctified the name of Hashem, so to Eliyahu Nabiyo. Now, at this time, Eliyahu Nabiyo was the leader of the Jews spiritually. He was very strongly against Ahab. He kept on warning, reprimanding Ahab. There existed a friction between the two. Ahab was very glad to kill Eliyahu Nabiyo, but he knew he couldn't get to him. And so during this time, again the air was filled with idol worship. It was completely polluted spiritually, completely contaminated. There was no trace of faith in Hashem, except for a few prophets who lived there. Obadiah Hanavi, who had spared the lives of a few of his students, a few hundred, hid out in caves. Otherwise, no Jews then worship him. At this time, the Torah tells us that there was a man who was very wealthy, very influential, politically, a close friend of King Ahab. He decided to build a city. His name was Chiel. And the Torah says that Chiel built Jericho. And of course, the Torah says that actually he did not rebuild the destroyed city of Jericho. He just built another city carrying the same name. Why do an act like that? Why must he have been in Jericho? The answer is that Chiel was a Russia. He was very evil and he was very disdainful to the words of the Torah and the words of Tzaddikim. Because Yeshua had issued a decree, a curse of this kind, he went to the show and had complete disdain for it. So he began to build the city called Jericho. And then as he built the foundation, Chiel's oldest son died to fulfill the curse of Yeshua. As he went on, next son died, third son, and he was so evil he refused to stop. He would not take a lesson from this. When he finally completed the city, his youngest son, his name was Segui, passed away. At this point he woke up, couldn't take it anymore, and he sat and mourned. That shiver for his youngest son, covered a mourning for all his other children. Because he was so important a personage, they came to console him in bereavement. Very important, with provincial officials, even the king himself. Ahab the king came to visit him, Menachem Abel. And at the same time, Eliyahu Navi also came in. Both were sitting in front of Chiel, and both remained silent. Remember the laws of Shiva, laws of mourning to Ahab. When a person goes to visit an Avel, a mourner, he comes in no matter who he is, no matter how great he is, he must be really silent until the mourner opens up the conversation. He must wait there silently until the mourner begins the conversation. So this case both respectfully sat there until Chiel finally began to speak. Chiel asked Eliyahu Hanavi, he told him, I have a question to ask you, and I asked and insisted and demanded to give me a true answer. Eliyahu said, of course, that's the question you have. The Torah asked, it is fact that Yeshua issued a decree that any person who will build the city with the name Jericho, his children will die. And when he responded, it is true. In fact, I'm very sorry, but that's the way the curse went. And because you violated this order, your children passed away. Chiel said, I'm not objecting to that question. I have a different question to ask. Isn't it true? And in the Torah, which Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Jews, there is also a pasuk, a sentence, which says, the Satan, the Havanatan, and the Kim Afer, if you Jews turn away from Hashem, turn away from faith, as you will worship idols, then the Otsar Es HaShamayim, Hashem will hold back, will control, will stop the rain coming from heaven. There will be no further rain, there will be a drought, there will be a famine. This is the punishment for idol worship. You know the answer to this, fact two, true. So, he who says, now come to my main question. Question which irks me no end. How is it possible that surely you must admit Moshe Rabbeinu was the Rebbe, when Shua was the Talmud the student? Which one of the two is greater? Of course, Moshe Rabbeinu is greater. So if both of them issued a curse or a decree, that surely the curse of Moshe Rabbeinu should be much stronger, much more powerful, and should be fulfilled much faster than Yeshua. How come then, he said, that I committed a crime and the curse of Yeshua befell me? It was fulfilled. Here sits a man, Ahav, King Ahav, who has spread idol worship throughout the entire country. Where is the curse of Moshe Rabbeinu? How come there is rain and there is no famine? What happened to the curse of Moshe Rabbeinu? One of you rose up, stood up quickly, and said, just a moment. You're right, I'm going to do something about this. Went to a corner, began to speak. He knew privately, speak to Hashem. He had the curse. He said, Hashem, I'm going to ask for something which is practically impossible. He never tells us that for angels to fulfill the bidding of Hashem. The word angel in Hebrew is malach. Malach means angel, and malach also means messenger. An angel is a messenger of Hashem to carry out a mission. He also says that Hashem sends these angels on every type of mission except three. Three keys which only Hashem holds possession of and never allows an angel to get hold of. In other words, an angel can perform any mission or any miracle, but not these three. First one of three is rain. No possibility for an angel ever in history to bring about rain. The power of producing rain is only in the hands of Hashem. No angel, no matter how great and powerful and mighty an angel is, an angel is so ready to destroy you or his ego. The power of the angel is practically infinite. And yet, this one other, producing rain, is something which is only in the hands of Hashem. It is a key that Hashem has not released, even to an angel. Therefore, in this case, Lord said to Hashem, the first time I'm making a difficult request, I ask that you surrender the key, the rain, and then give me the power over the rain. Here we find the feeling of prayer by them is so great that without hesitation Hashem said, I'm going to change the rules of creation, I'm going to change my own rules, I'm going to give you the key to rain. You now control rain. The other two keys that have never given to an angel either, first is birth, creation of life. No angel can create life. And the second is pre-estimation. You take a dead person, bring them back to life, only before that miracle. It's really Hashem to do it. By the way, of course, the strength of this is said with such emphasis in the world, that therefore we know, we say it practically true, the firmest conviction of our faith, that if ever scientists claim to be able to create a living cell, or anything that is alive, we know that that is false. It is a lie. It will always be a lie. Ever they claim that it is false because no scientist whose end is always to rot in the grave himself. Let's see him, any scientist, no matter how wise, produce life for himself or avoid the grave. No matter how wise they are, they end up the same as the lowest human on earth. The same, during the same earth, the same, returning to the same dust as the lowest being. Any scientists who are nothing compared to the powers of angels truly cannot produce human life or any kind of life. Secondly, scientists who now have stopped claiming 10 years ago, in the period of time the scientists claimed they could produce rain. Not thinking about witch doctors, we're talking about scientists who are much worse than this, who claimed that they could seed the clouds with dry ice, other ridiculous items, wish they could produce rain, and according to the tell us what this is completely false. It's a false claim, and can never, no matter how far they advance, they can never produce these items because these remain in the hands of Hashem. In this case, though, Hashem said to the Rebbe, I give you the power of the rain. Immediately, the Rebbe swore, rose up and swore, he bowed, that there shall be no more rain until he himself releases the rain from the heavens. This is to fulfill the curse of the Torah against those who commit idol worship. And so we find that running up in a period of very serious famine, the drought of no rain came, people were dying of hunger, and got to a point where it was intolerable, unbearable. Achav tried to get to the Rebbe to force him to retract his statement. He couldn't find him, and there seemed to be no end to this because the anger of the Rebbe, he was a very, very avenging type of person, type of being. He wanted to avenge the honor of Hashem because it had been violated, desecrated, with so much idol worship, and he said, now they must pay for it by this famine which will last and last. This was the attitude of the Rebbe. However, up above in heaven, or below, throughout, the ego, the characteristics of Hashem, above all, are chesed, rahmah, kindness and compassion. And when we witness the suffering of multitudes of hunger and famine, we will decide in heaven that the drought must come to an end. Rain must come to save the people. Yet how could rain come if Kaviyachal, the key to rain, was no longer in heaven? How could rain come if the key was held by one person who was so solid and so full of his anger, his desire for vengeance? He would not release that key no matter how much he was begged for it. Very difficult to comprehend this. If Hashem would ask, he would not be for the key, he'd refuse it. Why? How could he refuse the request of Hashem? The answer is that because he felt that Hashem was kind, but he himself would avenge the honor of Hashem. Hashem and therefore Hashem's modesty, if we were to humble us. Kindness, Hashem would forego his own honor, not the honor of him. So the Gemara says that there had to be a special plan. And this was the plan which explains the next series of incidents. Hashem suddenly said to the Rebbe, I want you to go to the home of a certain woman, Sofati. There you will find one who will provide food for you. You have to eat, she'll give you food. He traveled to this woman, he came to her house, she was very horrible for seeing all these prophets. So she said to him, welcome you to my home, I'll give you every type of service possible because to serve a tzaddik is the biggest privilege possible. However, I have only a tiny drop of food in the house, and through a miracle, it was known this food remained, it became, it multiplied whatever was enough for them to eat. she fulfilled that promise to serve in the army throughout. But then, very shortly after that, she had a small son. The son became ill, and very quickly he passed away. The son died. As soon as he died, she married to him, and then Elisa said to him, "I accuse you of murder." He was shocked to hear this. "Yeah, let me committing murder and be accused of murder." And she said, "You are the one that is guilty of the death of my son. Because until you came, I was considered an ordinary type of person. Not evil, perhaps not very great tzaddikus, just medium. Therefore, being judged as a medium type of person, well, let's say even better, a semi-tzaddikus, but of course, there was no judgment against me. Once you came, then I was considered a rank of comparison. The ratio to you, I was considered nothing, right? Evil. Of course, compared to you, I was so small, just in terms of the greatness, therefore, my son was put to death. So your arrival caused the death of my son, I accuse you of murder." This was a very uncomfortable feeling. Being accused of murder, trying to pacify and console a woman whose child had died was an impossibility. So he thought about it, and first turned away, went to the corner, began to doubt and pray to Hashem. He said, "Hashem is very kind and very good to me. I ask another favor. Ask that you release my hands the key to Priya Tamisa, the key to bringing a dead person back to life. I must have it to save my honor and to save the Shemot Yechel Hashem. Be a disgrace to me. Great ascetic, great murder, thief to claim what I could. Allow me to have this power. I'll bring back this child to life." And Hashem replied, "Oh, of course, if you ask for it, naturally I'll give it to you. Before I give it to you, though, I wanted to ask you a question. And whatever answer you give, I will accept. The question is, who is the rabbi and who is the student? Between the two of us." He jumped back and I said, "You know, the answer is, of course, Hashem, you are Hashem, you are my creator, my living, of your very lowest of students." Hashem said, "Fine. In that case, then, there are three keys, only three primary keys in existence. Now, if they must be divided, what would you say? The rabbi should have two of it and the student one, or vice versa?" And the answer was, "But I want to have two, understood." Hashem said, "If I give you the key to Kriya Samesim, you're going to have two of the three keys, that plus the key to Rei, and I'll have only one. Is that right?" And then he answered, "Well, if you give me the key to Kriya Samesim, then of course I'll return the key to Rei to you, and you'll have two, and I'm going to have one." Hashem said, "Well, all right. With this, he took the key to Kriya Samesim, and it's fitting not to use the word, but it was sort of a trick, in a sense. You can't fathom it, one nature, object. If that will happen, just in a case where, even as great as he was, still, he was sort of compelled to take the steel. He was very happy to bring the child back to life, it's clear. The next sense we find is Hashem said to Eliyahu HaNavi, "Go quickly to Achav and tell him tomorrow the yet not Nachar. I am going to give rain, not you anymore. You swore, you vowed, you would not give rain until the time came. You be pacified. Tell him I am going to give rain. The rain is now in my hands." That's how the rains came. Now we find in the Rebbe Kodesh, says that one of the people, one of the atheist men, once came to one of the rabbis of Rav Shimon Chayyim. They said to him, "You of the Jewish faith, you believe so much in Hashem. Well, Hashem, you say, is infinitely great. Almighty. What kind of your Torah, the Jewish Torah says, there's no one like Hashem in all the world, in all the nations, greater than all the nations. Well, in that case then, Hashem is greater than all the great. That will say he's greater than the Jews. Is that the way to speak about Hashem? Well, very good, said that his answer was, very simply, matter of fact, that he said, you're right. Hashem is greater than all the gods. Well, among the Jews, he said, Kaviyachol, those who are greater, Kaviyachol greater than Hashem. How? In the words of Hashem, mentioned many times in words of the Talmud, Hashem says, something mentioned in this in the King. Hashem says, I am the supreme ruler of the universe. Universe and all our creation, all the heavens above, all the angels in heaven, the archangels and so on. I rule over all and everything. Who rules over me, Hashem says? None that rules over me. That Tzaddik Hashem. The Tzaddik Hims, the holiest Tzaddik, and therefore rules over Hashem. Because if Hashem issues a decree, Tzaddik Hims can pray and nullify that decree. If Tzaddik Hims issues a decree, Hashem will prove that decree in the evil. But here we see that Hashem killed a person, rule Hashem. Well, King Gamir Levi brought that person back to life. Of course, we find that throughout history, the Tzaddik Emes is so great, and therefore Hashem, again, is his infinite greatness and humbleness, allows the Tzaddik Emes to be above himself. That's in the case of Tzaddik Emes. The Gemara says, the two in the Gemara who discuss this case. However, all the rabbis in the Gaon spoke before a fistor and said, I would compare the case of Eliyahu Levi to one, a person who locked the door and lost the key. What's happened? The person locks himself out. He can't get back in again. So the case, because locking the door meant the gates to rain, but then he lost the key to the power of rain. No marathon. Because he was forced to surrender the key without being able to open that door that he had locked. It was now opened by Hashem instead. The rains were stopped by him. The rains did not resume, but returned to earth through himself. It had to be opened by other than the Levi by Hashem. Yossi was so great that he was zecher to the privilege of very few people on earth ever received. To be able to have Eliyahu Levi visit him in person, express words of Torah, this happened to very few great rabbis in the past. Time of the Gemara, there were a few who deserved that privilege, who enjoyed it. Then we find Shimon Yochai's, of course, the Zohar Kaddish throughout, had discussions with Eliyahu Levi in matters of Torah, in the secrets, where Eliyahu Levi himself called from Shimon Yochai's already, so great was Shimon Yochai's. We find later on the time of the Arizal, discussion between the Arizal and Eliyahu Levi, but then, the time of Hashem but it is a fact that it was written in Ashrei, unfortunate, that's the dead person who Zecher could see Eliyahu Levi during his lifetime. Especially if he's wanted to have any time to spend time with him to study where to pay. Yossi was one of those. He was the chief rabbi of Zikredi. He used to have Eliyahu Levi come to him every single day to study Torah. One day, Yossi lectured before the Shiva, and he said, Abba Eliyahu, father Eliyahu, father being a respectful term, my father, Leo, Rabbi Eliyahu, was a captain. Captain means very Keter, and I'm very sure of Keter. That's not a Keter. I'm sure he used to come to Yesi every day. Now, in the course of this statement, he gains time to not appear in the Yesi song. One of the three ways, and then we came to Yesi, and the Yesi asked him, tell me why you abstained. Why didn't you come to visit me? Actually, of course, there's even more than this cook. He once said that the Vigat curse is so vile, so evil, that it should be avoided at all costs. There are certain characteristics that are bad. The curse, the temper is so bad that it's more destructive than any other kind of Vigat characteristic. The curse can actually destroy a person spiritually. Plus, it can destroy a person or persons physically too. You have chaos, anger, that can create an affection and enmity between people, especially between husband and wife, has a show. You can destroy the show of bias, and that's one of the worst things in existence. However, this need of chaos, sometimes it is good to have a slight trace of it. A little bit. Where? When? Case of the Talmud Chacham. The Chacham, the sage, one of the teachers is supposed to have a slight trace of chaos because with it, the students are much more obedient, much more attentive. Therefore, in this case, chaos is constructive. You should have some chaos. But this chaos is supposed to be only chaos of Torah. For the sake of the study of Torah, no other reason whatsoever. In other words, for the sake of Kedusha, for the sake of Torah, for the sake of Mitzvah. Here, the other he said to Rabbi Yossi, what do you accuse me of? Curse? You call that curse? I was angry at Achav because he spread idol worship around all the 10 tribes. Is that considered a crime of curse? That's Kedusha. The other said, I nice to the Yerushalmi. And the Chacham is angry because of the Torah within him. Well, Torah is like fire. It's a Torah that burned within me, and therefore I was angry. Why do you accuse me of being cutthroat? Yes, yes, right there. You have just proven that you're angry, not because of this Kedusha. I said a word to became angry. This was for the sake of Kedusha, this was for the sake of your own honor. This was the exact exchange between the two. And of course, because of the fact that he did possess a slight degree of this anger, not for his convention's sake, we find that Hashem once said to Eliyahu, because you are so angry, and the place like Hashem said, you want the Jews to be punished, so let the leader I want. I want a leader who will defend my people throughout. I want to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. When Hashem threatened to destroy the Jews, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, kill me first, or else forgive the Jews. And therefore, you must leave the leadership and hand it over to Elisha Hanavi after you. This is the kind of leader Hashem wants. And this is the leader called Ahavas Yisrael. This is a leader that we must practice today. We must realize this point, though, because today there is a malady, a very evil sickness, that has permeated most of the different sects among the Jews. There is such a disunity, a dislike, a friction between the different forms, the different levels. Among the Jewish people, you have more parties than you have nations in the United Nations. If a person does not live up to your standards, to religion, or any other item, you have no right to condemn that Jew. You have the right to speak to him, to try to correct him, but to speak softly, to try to bring him back. What does Hashem want that he punish a Jew who commits a war? Hashem is not my policeman, but I didn't create you to punish those who go against me. I will take care of the punishing. Your duty to bring those who have strayed back to me. The biggest mitzvah a Jew can do is not perform this for himself, but to make others perform this for much more than yourself. Therefore, we find today that there are Jews who are not that religious, not that orthodox. If a Jew today is a Zionist, but not a religious Zionist, it does not mean that he must bury him, he must destroy him. It means that he has a good ideal, but he has wandered from the correct track, correct path of religion. We have to sympathize with him and pity on him to try to bring him back. Not to condemn, not to destroy. Because the Midrash of the Midrash, if a Jewish woman who carries a stick of vengeance, he judges others harshly, and he felt that in heaven, he himself too is judged just as harshly. Always be a Dominican Swiss, judge all people for their benefit, to be judged softly too. Especially today we have the only mission names because that too will be known. We have certain ones who are very adamantly one-sided against all others, consider themselves superior to the degree, ultra-orthodox, they're going to a free-time doctor and so on. We have those who consider the rest of the Jewish people as not even part of the Jews. This goes not just for the super-orthodox, but also for the opposite. Remember the stories of the top Reform leader, Reform rabbi, the rabbinate, who once was interviewed by one of the Jewish writers in a religious paper, and he asked this Reform leader, he wouldn't call a rabbi, a leader, and he asked him when Mashiach comes, who's going out to greet him? This Reform leader said, of course, I'll go out to greet him. I shall be the first one as representative of the Jews. And this writer asked, what about the older rabbi, not in our brother, with us our brother. What about them? So he said, well, if you do my father, I'll say these two are also Jews. We'll allow them that credit, they're also Jews. But this was said in a very serious way. And today we find that the rebel, in fact, they desecrate every mitzvah in favor of the Reformed rabbis. They are the leaders. The same as the old days, leaders of idol worship, yet let alone the fact that they mislead their flock, but they too criticize and attack those of the true faith, true Orthodox belief, and those with which they can be at peace. A Jew who is misled, a Jew who has gone astray, a Jew who has never studied Torah, a Jew who has not known anything, that Jew should be aided and helped along every manner possible. But a false leader, a false Mashiach, a reform leader, is one who is literally poison. And poison must be eradicated. At least publicize the fact that no pity, there's no joining with them. You cannot join with them, you cannot try to have them join with you. They must be separated, put into the freedom, separated and ostracized from the Jewish community. If possible, they help bring back those who they are lost. Not just to teach those who are very religious and very learned, but rather to stress the ones who are far. This was the work of Hillel, the elder, who said the rules of lighting Hanukkah candles are not to start with 8 candles on the first night, 7 on the second, track each night, rather start with 1 candle on the first night and then 2 on the first. Hillel stressed this point, you must teach smallest Jew, smallest people to one single candle, and then increase slowly, but bring close that one as far away, because that is the main part of the mess. You start the miracle by bringing together, bringing truly fold those who have wanted the most. Again, the true leader of the Jews is one who strives very hard to bring another Jew, as many as possible, close to Hashem. this is a duty for every single Jew. Male, those words are that you are created. Each person is like a tree. And the trees that bear fruit, there are those who are barren. You cannot be a barren tree, no matter how tall and majestic and beautiful. A tzaddik who looks for himself only is a tree that is barren. You must be a fruit-bearing tree, which means you must bring other Jews to you. Thus Hashem, to save them from the complete loss of their religion and loss of their own health. Whatever Ganeden they get in the mitzvahs, you will have part of it too. The Gemara says that a Russia means an evil person, he is born, then there is anger in heaven. This person has anger in heaven, and the Jews suffer. The question is, of course, the rule is that Hashem never judges a person for the future. A person is destined to commit a crime. He is not punished until he commits that crime. As long as he still is innocent, there is no punishment for him. Question here is then, how come the Gemara says that when a Russia is born, not a birth, he's not a Russian, not evil. So why is he already condemned? Why must all the Jews suffer for something which is in the future, that no part of theirs, also he is not evil yet? The answer is that when we speak about a Russia being born, we're talking about the birth itself was an illegal act. This is speaking about Tikkun HaBris, which means perfection in mating. A person can even mate legally his own wife, but if it is done with illegal force, unclean, impure force, results are that the children born as the shalom do not have a pure neshama, pure soul. And this is why we find that some children from birth on, from childhood on, have a tendency to turn to evil, turn away from purity. While others, great tzaddikim, have children that generally are the ones who follow their path. This is in the majority of cases. Naturally, you have the exceptions. You have the case of Yitzhak Avinu gave birth to Esau Ganesha also, Esau Yaakov. There are other reasons there, depending on circumstances, because Esau was the result of old demon that existed. You cannot compare it to modern day cases. We do find, though, later cases also, where tzaddikim gave birth to the shem. Again, those are exceptional cases, each one having a special reason for it. But generally, the child that is born, the purity of the child, the nature of the child's purity, depends upon the purity of the minds of the parents. And therefore, even though the child is born from their parents, the freedom, the choice, the free choice is still his, no matter how bad he may have been born, he can always correct himself. A little more difficult. The same as we find very simply, one person is born with a nature of a very good-hearted person, very soft nature, that never loses temper. The second person is born very hot-tempered. Why is it for him the slightest action is contrary to his will? Not that he's that bad, actually, but that's his nature. And he is punished for his temper. Why should he suffer on the second person and it's so easy? The answer is that the way he is born, it gives him now more difficulty affecting himself. He does have the power to control his temper or any other evil characteristic he's born. That power he does have, and he is held responsible. What caused the difference in the birth between these two cases? The difference was the force of the parents, the purity of the parents. And that is why we say a Russia is born, this causes harunah, anger of Hashem, come to the world, people are punished. Because when anger comes, the world says when a plague breaks out, a disease breaks out, you find that many innocent people die also. Once the angel of death is given free rein, he kills indiscriminately. Therefore, once there is anger that comes down from heaven, many people will suffer.
what is the antidote to this? Nevertheless, says in Sunday Kiddush, in this morning, the main function is to inject knowledge, wisdom, purity of thought into the minds of the scholars. Moshe Rabbeinu is the symbol of Das, symbol of wisdom, and this is what he injected into the minds of all Jews. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gematria of Tariyak, 613. He taught the Torah to Jews. 630 mitzvahs are made to tzaddik. Hashem gave mitzvahs to the Jews of tzaddik to purify them, to cleanse them. And with the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu, they should be Gematria Chalena. And he is the one that opposes this anger of Hashem because he teaches the Torah to the Jews. With a tzaddik in this to guide, lead, then this can be avoided.